Welcome to the Words Matter Pod, a podcast dedicated to wordsmiths. My name is Akil. I'm here with business and trademark attorney Amanda C. Gale, Esquire, owner of the Gale Law Firm and author of What's in a Name? How to Choose a Trademark, Detailed Tips, Examples, and Case Law Directly from a Trademark Attorney. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Great. Thank you for being a part of this.
No problem. Happy to make the time to participate.
So who are you?
Who am I? So me, I hate when people describe themselves and say, well, I am a, and they describe their profession. Who I am is a fun, loving, adventurous, ambitious, creative, young Black woman from Brooklyn, New York, who enjoys spending time with good people and having a good time. What I do is help entrepreneurs protect and develop their businesses in contracts and intellectual property, which includes, for my practice, copyrights and trademarks.
Yeah. I think that when people think of a lawyer, their mind automatically goes into a trial attorney or a prosecutor. What led Amanda Gale into the direction of becoming a business and trademark attorney? And you often find yourself having to explain yourself even more about what you do.
I do sometimes. It depends on who I'm talking to. It's funny that you say that when people think of lawyers, they think of trial attorneys, because that is actually where I did start my experience as a lawyer. My background is actually in public interest. Straight out of law school, I was a public defender, working with indigent individuals who were experiencing issues within the criminal justice system. I worked a lot of cases on particularly youth cases, helping them to navigate the system without obtaining a criminal record. But through my practice, my budding practice, I became entrepreneurial myself. So a little background about me. So I went to New York Law School, beautiful law school, located in Tribeca in New York City. I worked a lot during school, and perhaps my first time around on the bar, I did not have enough lead time to prepare. So I failed the bar the first time, and I failed it by 12 points. I was devastated. And because, I mean, for a lot of us, graduate school is new, as well as, you know, particularly going through becoming an attorney, it was a big deal. So there's a lot of pressure on me. I'm a child of immigrant parents and grandparents, and everybody's watching Amanda to see what Amanda's going to do. So to fail the bar the first time, when everyone was so excited, my mom threw me this big graduation party, and it was just a big deal. To fail the bar was like extremely devastating. Also, lawyers tend to be type A people. And, you know, we just, you know, want the best. We strive for the best. We're almost somewhat of perfectionists, some would say. So it was a big deal. So I failed the bar the first time, and I was actually working at the time because they allowed us to practice under a student practice order. So you like work and you're accompanied by a barred attorney. And there were tons of supervisors. Everybody there was really supportive. But I had to then regroup and figure out what I was going to do to make sure that I passed the bar the second time around. So I buckled down. I actually worked extra arraignment shifts, which was crazy when I think back on it. So arraignment shifts are when people are initially arrested. So I would pick up shifts from my colleagues, like who didn't want to work their shifts. And so that I had enough time to take off to, you know, because I'm still self-supporting myself. And so that I had enough time to take off so that I could dedicate complete time to taking the bar the second time around. So I did that. I locked myself in my bedroom in Flatbush, Brooklyn, and I studied and I studied and I studied and I studied for about 8 weeks. And the second time around, I passed the bar. Yay, very excited. But as I was actually preparing to go to the bar the second time, I really just felt, because again, that experience is hard on your self-esteem. And I really needed something to kind of keep myself upbeat. And I started looking around because actually I had created like a wallpaper on my laptop that said, I will pass the bar. And I was looking around. I was like, oh, of course somebody made a, you know, t-shirt out of this or something, you know, somebody cares about law students. But I looked around and there was nothing. And I said, well, I wish there was this thing. Okay. So I chose the next best thing. I had like a smiley face t-shirt or something. And I said, well, I'll wear that. So I wore that to the bar. And again, success story. I passed the bar. I continued with my legal career practicing in criminal defense. But this idea of I will pass the bar kept coming back to me. It was like a nagging thing. I was like, well, why doesn't anyone have a brand that says I will pass the bar? What is there to encourage and motivate not just legal professionals, but really all professionals to pass their board exams and to move forward in their career. You spend all this time going to school, you want to accomplish the final task of passing whatever your board exam is, right? So that was how I Will Pass the Bar actually was created. So I have a retail t-shirt line called Believe in You Tees. Our premier design is I Will Pass the Bar. It is designed specifically with legal professionals in mind. I encourage all family, friends of law students to get one, and the law students themselves, get it, encourage yourself, motivate yourself, inspire yourself, because you will need it. You need to study. It's not going to magically make you pass the test, but it's going to keep your spirits up as you do so. So that was the beginning of my career as an entrepreneur. And before I actually released the design, you know, as a lawyer, my instinct is protection. You got to protect this because someone's going to rip you off. Someone's going to steal it. And I actually, you know, started reading up on the trademark process and how I could do this. And I was actually successful and I was able to trademark it. So I own the registered federal trademark for I'll Pass the Bar. And that was initially like how I got into trademarks and started thinking about my entrepreneurship journey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you always consider yourself an entrepreneur even before making those shirts? Like, what were you doing as a child? Like, did you sell candy in school or something like that? Or did you, you know, what did you do?
You know, as a kid, honestly, no. Yeah. In the back of my mind, I knew as a lawyer, I would want to have my own law firm. But I didn't think of a bunch of other businesses. It wasn't necessarily how I was raised. Again, so like child of immigrant parents, a lot of immigrant parents encourage you to get a job and stick to it. Make your money, go home, call it a day. So it really wasn't something that I was thinking about growing up. I wanted to have a, you know, amazing profession, and being a lawyer fit my personality as well as it was something that I was passionate about, specifically racial and social justice work. And that was going to be my path. I thought about, you know, eventually having a civil rights practice, but being an entrepreneur was not my initial focus. So.
I think that doing the work as a copyright and trademark attorney is just as fulfilling and helpful to people as a civil rights attorney?
Actually, I do. So when I decided I wanted to be a civil rights attorney, that was me as a very young girl reading about Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement and just wondering how I could make an impact and just learning that many of the people who did make an impact in those times were in fact attorneys.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be in a position of power where I could help them get out of jail, help change the laws, help advocate for certain policies and all of those things as a child. As a law student, I made sure to have experiences where I was exposed to what that really would look like. So I worked with the New York Civil Liberties Union. I worked with the ACLU in conjunction with my law school. I wrote a million papers on racial justice and all the discrimination that people faced. I did some impact litigation work, and I, of course, worked also as a public defender. And through those experiences, I really, quite honestly, felt kind of limited in what can be done. The system is such a large like animal to take on, right? Like it is a monster for one person, and I'm not one person. There are tons of racial justice and social justice attorneys and just advocates doing amazing work, but it's bigger than all of us, to be honest. I think that systemic oppression is something that is really going to be something that will take generations and generations. But what I did notice is that helping my clients from the day-to-day experience, I was helping them get out of jail. I was helping them, you know, go back to their families, maybe resume their work, resume their lives, but I wasn't making it better in any real way, right? Initially, you know, you get them out of whatever their immediate situation is, but I wanted to really impact people's lives. And I find as a business attorney, as a trademark attorney, as an intellectual property attorney, that's how I'm actually able to do it. Many of my clients are small business owners. They've never had businesses before. They don't understand business. They don't, you know, they don't know what to ask. They don't know what to do in terms of running their business. And I really feel fulfilled in as though I'm doing almost a different form of public interest work in being an accessible attorney, someone who looks like them, someone they can relate to, breaking down the information so that it is digestible and affordable so that they can still get what they need so that hopefully they're able to build their business and acquire enough wealth to really change their lives and their families' lives and their future families' lives.
Are you saying that, because you said it was a monster, the system is such a monster to take on, are you saying that you would need more of a team to do that, or you can do it by yourself?
It's not necessarily the team, right? It's the powers that be. It's the world has to want to end racism and systemic oppression. And all people aren't bad, but there are systems in place. There's a hierarchy. Where somebody has to be at the top and somebody has to be at the bottom and somebody has to be at the middle for the world to function. And some people don't want the system to change. Like the fact that we advocate for change and speak out against discrimination and, you know, Me Too is a new movement and Black Lives Matter is a new movement and it's 2022. And congratulations to Ketanji Brown Jackson on being the first Supreme Court Justice as a Black woman, but it's 2022, right? So these things are bigger than a lot of us sometimes. And even, you know, what she experienced during her hearings, you see it play out. Some people don't want change. So I just decided I was kind of frustrated with pursuing that for people in that form. I think that I add much more value in my practice.
Back to you as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Were there any other lawyers, like examples of lawyers who are entrepreneurs as well, that you saw that you tried to model yourself after?
So growing up, other attorneys that I wanted to model myself after, not growing up, but actually, I'll change that. Johnny Cochran. Johnny Cochran in the Cochran. I just thought he was clever. I love when we're able to integrate our personalities in our trial work. So let me just say, while I don't do that work anymore, I was a great trial lawyer. I was a great hearing attorney. So after I worked in public defense, I also worked in police misconduct prosecution, and I won all my cases. Okay. So I was great. But it just didn't feel like my path where I would be able to make a long-term impact on the communities. But there were definitely lots of attorneys who have inspired me along the way. I'm definitely inspired by attorneys who run amazing firms, but also have been able to tap into other industries because we are more than just one thing. I'm a lawyer. I'm grateful. I love being a lawyer, but even in me starting the firm and becoming more entrepreneurial, and then with the t-shirt line, there's some more things to come, right? So I've been able to explore other avenues, and I just say stay tuned.
Yeah, I like to hear that. You know, is there a fine line between showing your personality in the courtroom and, you know, fine line between showing your personality and kind of making a mockery of the case?
No, because you got to think, when you are presenting a case, you're kind of acting, right?
Yeah.
You're never trying to make a mockery, but you're trying to influence, depending on the forum and the type of case it is. So I did hearings where the judge was making the decision and the administrative judge was making the decision. And then I did trials and hearings as a public defender where, you know, you're trying to appeal to a jury, right? You kind of have to know your audience. You have to know what's acceptable. You're not cracking jokes. It's not a joke. Mm-hmm. But there are certain things that you want to say to catch their attention, maintain their attention, and connect the case to real life things so that you're able to persuade them. So I remember when I was getting my job as a public defender, and this actually got me my job, I did an opening statement. So to give you like a mock-up example, it could have come from like a bunch of different cases that they kind of meshed together to come up with the example. But I compared my the case to apples to oranges, right? And I just kind of went on with this like example of apples to oranges and apples to oranges and apples to oranges. And I literally had a plane to, where did we go? Italy, probably like the next day.
Yeah.
But I did the statement and they were like floored. They were like, they didn't offer me the job on the spot. They offered it to me like after I left, maybe like a couple hours later. But to leave on my spring break at the time, I'm still in law school, because you get the job before you actually graduate. But to leave knowing that I was able to do that for myself was like amazing. But that was me integrating my creativity and my personality to get their attention. And it's it. And I've done other things in trial, but I won't say those on the record. So.
Yeah, of course, don't want you to give it to me. I don't really know what legally you couldn't be disclosed or not.
I could probably say that, but those were real cases, so I just won't. But I've definitely utilized my creativity, and I think that that's what makes me unique as a lawyer, because I'm more than one thing. I'm not what you would anticipate necessarily for an attorney, because people think of lawyers as just like all gray and boring, and it's none of that.
You watch Better Call Saul?
No, let me tell you something. When I'm home and I see that there's a show and there's like a lawyer in a lead, I roll my eyes. I'm like, can I just watch TV? Can I not be reminded of work or anything like that? Like, I just want to chill. So honestly, one of my favorite new shows that I've enjoyed is watching Abbott Elementary, because I'm a bit of a anthropologist in a way. I like the study of people and even like, I guess, their environments, their cultures, their like jobs and stuff like that. But I love the insight into what being a teacher looks like, because I like to learn about other things. I know what being a lawyer is like. I know it. Got tons of lawyer friends. Even if it's not an area I practice, I know it. And I've been a lawyer for a long time at this point. I know it. I like learning about other things.
Yeah, I was going to make a reference to some of the characters, but you know, since you don't watch it, you wouldn't know.
I don't watch it.
So you use social media, you know, TikTok and Instagram to promote and, you know, like you said, bringing into your personality, using your personality as a lawyer. How effective do you think it is to use social media to promote your work, but also using levity to do so as well by using TikTok and Instagram to make things easier for people to understand?
I think it's really important. I think that in this new age world of running a business online and wanting to connect with potential clients, I think it is a clever way to do so. It's the way, as the kids say. So it's fun for me. I don't do any that, you're not gonna catch me doing a TikTok dance. I'm not doing that. But you know, if it's a song or it's a theme that can relate to something that I think is important, I'll do it. It's fun. Yeah. It's more fun and I think more engaging than, you know, me just sitting down and like telling people why trademarks are important. I think that's important and there's a place for that, but people get bored easily and I understand that. So
yeah.
If they need to hear a song in the background, that's fine.
Yeah. Or like facial expressions or like
different. Yeah. Although some of them, I don't know graphics. I don't know that people always understand the connection because they have to actually know the law still to get the connection. But I try to break it down as much as I can. And if people need more, then they should schedule a consultation.
good plug. I think this is the big question that most people want to know. You know, you see the TM symbol and the C with the circle around it on so many different products. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between a trademark and a copyright?
So I'm going to answer that. But before I do, because I think this is the first legal question, let me issue a disclaimer. This is not legal advice. This podcast is for informational purposes only, mostly just about me. But since we're getting into the legal content, this does not create an attorney-client relationship between me and anyone listening to this podcast. If you would like to do so, there's an engagement agreement and a consultation process to initiate those actions. But this is informational only. Now, back to your question. So a copyright, what'd you say?
Thank you for protecting me as well.
Well, you're fine, but that's for me. that's our disclaimer. But a copyright protects tangible forms of art. It protects music, film, books, things that are creative works created by a creative person, right? That would be the creator, the owner of that copyright. You can be the owner of a copyright without registration. However, to enforce your rights to sue someone for infringement, you need to register it. A trademark, however, it is a source identifier. It lets the consumer know whatever you're looking at, whether it's a logo, a word mark, or a symbol, a phrase, it comes from this particular commercial source, right? So trademarks help to further the commercial branding of a business versus copyright, which is the actual tangible works of art. And so the C is when something is copywritten and registered. Something that is TM means that you're intending to use it as a trademark, but it is not a registered trademark. R means that it is now a federally registered trademark and you've taken the steps to do that. What I've encountered is that people are using R and they don't have no trademark. So you can use TM as telling people that you intend to, but it has no real value, no real purpose, right? It's just to like preempt really registration, right? So you do it while you're kind of in the process to let people know, this is how I intend to use this. But you should not be using the R. It's actually fraud unless you have actually obtained a federal registration.
I forgot to even ask about the R too. So
okay.
thank you for, you know, letting everybody know that. Thank you for letting me know that, because it's it is very tedious, and we see things all the time. We see words and symbols all the time and we don't even know what they mean, but it's just so much a part of our everyday lives.
I know. And I feel like, again, that's where my services come in, I know that people are inundated with information. And I just saw a TikTok, because TikTok be getting me on a rabbit hole. I don't just make TikToks. I watch TikToks, you guys.
Yeah.
So I saw this woman giving information about business bank accounts. She was not an accountant. She was not a lawyer, giving information about business bank accounts and how people should set up their LLCs and how they where they should put money and take money and fund. And I was like, and all the comments, because what she said was wrong. And I was curious to see if anyone flagged it as wrong or said, or you should, or anyone in the comments said, no, I think I should hire an accountant or anything. Or the comments said, yeah, girl, thanks. I'm going to do this. Yeah, yeah. And I was just like, this is the problem. Yeah. And, you know, your real professionals don't, we're not going to directly offer advice online. One, because we are professionals, we provide services for a fee, right? But also, we're just not going to do that. We have to get the totality of someone's circumstance in order to be able to advise them about anything at all. So we're never going to do that in a direct way like that, right? But I just think it's interesting that non-professionals feel so free to do it and people eat it up. I understand wanting to save a buck, but you have to think about whether or not this information is credible, whether or not it's something that you want to entrust when you're talking about money and business and legal stuff. Like, I would entrust a computer salesman to fix my car. You know what I mean? I just don't understand why people are so blindly willing to follow people on LLC Twitter and a random bottle girl, because that's what she was. Shout out to, you know, all the people in the industry. But a random bottle girl about business advice. That don't make no sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people do it because they volunteer information, because I guess they feel like they did it and it was easy for them, and they feel like people are going to, you know, receive the information better from them than from, I guess people get intimidated by a person in academia, which they shouldn't, but you know, that's, I think this is how people are wired.
I think that makes sense, and I can understand that. But I think it's different when there are the me's of the world, and I have colleagues who are also business lawyers and do good work, and trademark attorneys and that do good work. And I think that it's very different when we literally are here, right? Mm-hmm. And accessible. My consultation fee is $150. It's affordable, right? And it's really not just $150. You lose it if you decide to move forward with services. It's like a deposit towards your services. So I feel like we spend money blindly all the time. There's luxury TikTok and there's all these things. Like, that's a very small investment to get the information that you need. My packages are obviously significantly more, but a consultation that would clear up any questions you might have about navigating business and starting business is worth it to feel confident about. I don't trust the random bottle girl unless she sells me a bottle of liquor. Like, I'm not listening to that. And I understand the accessibility, but I just feel like if you want to get the real information and obtain real knowledge, there are better ways to do that. And the legal professionals and the accountants are also online. Reach out to them. They will also help you. Don't entrust people who don't do those things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the intimidation, I look like the bottle girl. So I don't even understand that. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, I don't get it. You know, to me, you shouldn't be intimidated by a person with knowledge. You should be encouraged by them because they're the ones in the position to help you.
Right. What industries have the most, if this is something you know, what industries have the most accepted trademark applications and which ones have the most rejected?
It's not a matter of the industry. It's how the application is formatted. The USPTO will reject many a things for many a reason. but it really kind of depends on what the mark is and how you're trying to register it and what else exists within that space. So in my package, so after your consultation, you get a comprehensive clearance trademark search, which runs a full search of federal registration, state registrations, unregistered marks, as well as domain names, business names, social media, so that we have the full scope of what else exists within the classes that you want to register in. Yes. That is going to give us insight into whether there would be a potential likelihood of confusion. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds about what that is, but basically whether or not there is anyone else with the mark. So that's that. But there are a million other things that the USPTO can reject an application for. So it really comes down to just taking a look at the mark.
Yeah. What are some famous mistakes made by high profile people or well-known businesses when it comes to trademarking that new business owners just can learn from?
Oh man, one that is the most common is not searching it. just jumping out on a limb and saying, well, I'm gonna use this. The issue with that is one, you could be infringing on somebody else's mark, right? And by doing that, you can easily be hit with an infringement suit, right? You don't know what's out there if you're just using something and you don't know if somebody else has already registered it or if they've even been using it longer than you. Mm-hmm. So that's an issue. Gosh, more issues. Another issue is just naming it wrong, right? So I wrote what's in a name, how to choose a trademark, because I was encountering so many clients who, one, were starting brand new businesses and really didn't know what to name their businesses, as well as just seeing so many different marks applied for blindly, and they weren't good names, right? So, like, I guess I'm a trademark nerd at this point. I love a good name, like a good name of a business. But there are not all good names, right? There are various types of names. People just string a bunch of words together and think that that's going to be a good trademark, but there are standards, and the USPTO will reject something with the quickness. So it's best for you to have that insight before you file an application.
Yeah. But do you have any like famous examples, you know, like high profile cases?
High profile cases. You was reading the book. You want me to talk about what's in the book?
Well, no, I didn't read the book, but you know.
It's fine. Yeah. I'll give one. So a few years ago, LeBron James tried to register Taco Tuesday. Doing some online content for Taco Tuesday at his house. And they filed an application, him along with an attorney, filed an application for Taco Tuesday. It was rejected. It was rejected because it was cited as being common, because Taco Tuesday is a common phrase used across the globe. Yeah. For people's enthusiasm with tacos, right? And consuming them on a Tuesday. So things like that are quickly rejected for being common, right? So it's possible his lawyer told him that before, who knows? But that's a famous example. It happens really every day. Like, yeah, there are a million. Beyonce and Jay-Z had one for Blue Ivy a couple years ago. Might still be going on, but there was a event planner that was already using Blue Ivy before them. So All types of things come up, right? So there are certain trademark actions that you can overcome, and there are some that you can't, but it's really discretionary, but it helps you to know what you're doing before you file the application.
Yeah. So hypothetically speaking, say a person comes up with a name for a business, they search that name on the USPTO, US Patents and Trademark Office, for people listening who don't know what that is. Okay. The name is available on the database to use, but there are other businesses who use that name, but the trademark isn't registered for that business.
Okay.
If this person was looking to get this trademark registered, if that person who was looking to get their trademark registered was your client, would you recommend them to follow through this with this process? And if they did, would that be an ethical business move on their behalf?
So without more information, because it's not just who else is using it, we have to do a full scope of all the issues and know exactly what the mark is. But I would tell them for sure to proceed with caution. Because no, it's not ethical, right? For them to know that someone else is already using it before them and for them to say, well, I'm going to file the application. Already, you know that it's being used. So you're not the first person to use it, but you want the trademark. Yeah. That don't seem right, right? Also, the potential is that person could come after them for infringement still and oppose their application and say that they were the first person to use it. So again, not to get too complicated, but when you file an application, it goes to the USPTO examiner. They may say green light, maybe, but they're looking out for federal registrations, but they're also looking to see what else exists like in the universe, right? So if they come across the same mark that you're saying is unregistered, but they know it exists, they may reject your application. If you were happen to not get that rejection and it goes forward, the next step is it's published for opposition. The opposition period actually gives people who may have an unregistered mark but has access to the USPTO's publishing system and finds out that you have this pending mark to register, they can oppose it at that time. So it just isn't a good method of practice. I help clients to pivot and to work on branding and come up with strong names that I'm confident that we'll be able to register. And I think that's a better way to go. Also, let me just say, when they go on the USPTO, that is not the full scope of everything that you need to know before you file an application. It's not just because there's a federal registry, there isn't a federal registration there, means that, oh, green light, I can file this. That's not what that means. There's so much more that they can reject for, and there's so much more you need to evaluate and analyze before you file an application.
Yeah.
If you don't want to lose your money.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, because a lot of people might go through with that process, but at the same time, they're taking advantage of another person's lack of information. So, you know, that's where the ethical part comes in.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Business ethics is definitely.
I get that everybody wants to make a dollar, but you also want to sleep well at night. I sleep very well.
Yeah.
Because I'm right by people, and I think people should do the same.
Yeah. You said in your book, copyrights are our creative's strongest weapon of defense. Although you practice law, I wanted to know if you consider yourself a creative, because a large part of what you do is about protecting creatives.
I am a creative. Yeah. I'm super creative. Y'all know this, but I can sing, I can dance. I'm a creative. Yeah, I'm a writer also. So I wrote the book, but also I've written articles published for Essence. I'm definitely a creative. Essence, XO Nicole, absolutely a creative person. Before I practiced law, before I started the firm, very creative. It's in my nature. That's what I'm saying. Lawyers are more than one thing, and I definitely am.
Yeah. What do you say to business owners who are so adamant on a certain trademark, regardless of how, because this is something you explain in your book, regardless of how descriptive or common it is, no matter what you advise them against?
They want to lose their money. That's their business. honestly, if I had a client who was adamant about something, I would persuade them otherwise, right? Like if I knew that it didn't make sense and it wasn't strong. So after I do the search, I issue what's called a trademark opinion letter that states my full opinion about whether or not we should proceed. And then we actually do a follow-up call to discuss it and talk about strategy and all of that. I would be very frank with them because that's my nature anyway, and tell them it's not a good mark and we should pivot and we should come up with something else. If they were adamant, I would just keep talking to them about it, because I don't like to file applications that get rejected. That don't make me feel good inside. So I would try to convince them otherwise. But honestly, I prefer my practice and working with entrepreneurs because I actually find that they are they're very level-headed. So I haven't had a client that I have had to tell, you know, this isn't a good idea, and they didn't listen to me. They trust me. My clients know I'm a straight shooter. I'm honest. I'm gonna keep it real. I'm also not necessarily trying to make $1 million off of them. I want them to build strong businesses, have strong businesses, and protect themselves. And they trust that. So if I tell them it's not a good idea, they believe me.
Do you feel like being a copyright and business lawyer or just a lawyer in general is a thankless job?
No, my clients tell me thank you all the time. They send me packages and stuff. No. no. I don't think it's a thankless job. And to me, the fulfillment comes from seeing and knowing that my clients are developing assets that are going to benefit them throughout their lives. And intergenerationally, it will also benefit their families. I feel good about that. That's actually very rewarding for me, knowing that that's what I'm helping them do.
Yeah.
But also, they send me stuff, and that's nice, thank you. That's nice.
Yeah. No, it's definitely something I feel like I had to ask because you're doing so much work for people, and people might take for granted what you do, or even probably get upset with you. Say you write an opinion letter to the USPTO, and it gets rejected, and then you might get upset with you. So
let me just clear that up, what you said, so that the people don't get confused. So the opinion letter is something that I write after I do a search.
Okay.
That's me and the client. So I do the search, I write the opinion letter, I send it to the client.
Yeah.
So then the USPTO goes
to the client.
We discuss it. But again, my clients are level-headed. They're not going to get upset about what's in an opinion letter because they know we have to do a search. People are using marks that they don't have any information about. Me running a search is obtaining that information. So that's just what's out there. That's bringing that to their attention, and they need that information. My clients are cool. They're not like that. So yeah.
Back to your book, What's in the Name?
Yeah.
In the chapter titled Generic Marks, you wrote about brands who give their products names that you dub most popular.
Yeah.
Because those marks become so popular that it's hard for these companies to maintain their trademark. Is it on the owners of these brands to be more careful about giving their products generic names, or is it a name, or is a name becoming popular something that just can't be controlled?
Sometimes it can't be controlled, right? So some of the examples in there, aspirin, Jello is on its way.
I read about that in the book too.
So sometimes it can't be controlled, right? But so the example that I gave about Google will not let Google become generic, and it doesn't matter what you guys think about it. Google is gonna fight it tooth and nail to make sure that that doesn't happen. That is the brand's responsibility to make sure that they fight against what they view as, you know, it becoming the generic term. If they see people misusing it and kind of using it as a verb, then they are responsible for kind of shifting that narrative and shifting that dialogue so that they maintain their brand ownership.
But I mean, how do you prevent it from being like Google? How do you prevent it from being generic? Because I use Google as a verb as well all the time. And if I was to write that in an article or something, would they come down and scan the web for that article and, you know, get it taken down?
They have to make sure that they maintain their messaging, that they're never using it in that way, right? And when they do see it, they discourage it. And they sue people over it, as you see. So you have to just really be persistent and consistent about its use to make sure that doesn't happen. But also, you know, that's for really, really popular marks. So mm-hmm. one could hope, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my understanding of the law, other people might agree with me, that it's not always about how we feel or something being opinion based is just what can be proved, you know, based on evidential things. But you said you have to write, you write opinion letters to business owners.
Mm-hmm.
So how important is opinion and an emotion in the law?
So my opinion is not, my opinion is based on the law, right? My opinion is based on precedent within the trademark office. My opinion is based on my knowledge of how trademarks operate in analysis with the client's mark, as well as the results of the search. So it's not, it actually also does obviously incorporate whether or not I think that the branding is good at all, right? Yeah. But you would have gotten that during a consultation call. If you call me and you tell me, I want to start a business that sells orange pens and I want to name it Orange Pen. I'm not going to say, cool, let's do it. I'm going to run the search. Let's get it going. I'm going to tell you that's a descriptive name and we need a better name. Here, get the book, read this, and then let's talk about it some more so that you understand what you should be thinking about and coming up with name, and then we'll do some brand development. I also offer brand development as a package to help people come up with names when they don't know, if they want to move beyond just with the information that's in the book. But that's what I would tell you. So we wouldn't get all the way to a search, and then that's when I'm telling you that the name is bad. I wouldn't do that. And that's what we're talking about when you're talking about ethics and like running a business. Yeah. I sleep well, because I'm not out to just take people's money. I want them to build strong businesses.
When a new business owner pays for your trademark and services and the USPTO rejects the trademark, how is what you do to convince the USPTO different than what the owner can do independently to make sure the trademark is accepted?
The owner can't do what I can do because the owner did, likely, because actually some of my clients are lawyers, but the owner likely isn't a lawyer and can't write the response the way I can write the response. I will say that is very rare. That doesn't happen often. But when it does happen, I can respond to it. So a response to an office action is like a 10-page legal brief. It includes case law and an analysis that, again, only lawyers are really suited to write. So my clients wouldn't write it because they can't respond and say, I deserve this trademark because I worked hard at it. And it, you know, it. I named it after my grandmother and... No, they want more than that. And really only lawyers are suited to respond. That's why I have a lot of clients who come to me on the back end, like, oh, I tried to file my application on my own and I got this office action. What can you do? Because they can't respond to it. If you get an office action, there's so much stuff. They actually put case law in their office actions. So a person that's a non-lawyer is not in a position to respond to that. It might be overwhelming for them.
You know, back to you being an entrepreneur, with your work, do you feel like you're helping prevent new entrepreneurs from making the same mistakes that you've made?
I make no mistakes. No, honestly, I can't think of mistakes that I made. My businesses, I run them the way that I want to run them, the way that is best for me. But I definitely help them to avoid mistakes that I've seen other people make and help them to correct mistakes they could potentially make. Because again, back to the bottle girl, shout out to her. If somebody was to follow that advice that she gave in this video, they could get themselves in a lot of trouble. So if somebody comes to me and says, hey, I heard this, and I have had people do that if they, you know, come to me on a live or they hit me in a DM and they say, hey, I heard this, and I correct them.
I thought you were gonna say more.
No, that's it. Okay. I correct them. Yeah. So when you schedule a consultation, and if you say something to me that is wrong, or you say, hey, Amanda, I was on Twitter, and LLC Twitter, that's how I refer to them. LLC Twitter said XYZ. I said, no, 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 don't do that. You can't do that because this and that, right? And, you know, online, getting information, getting my information from business coaches, it's like a game of telephone. So the information may have started off correctly, and then through different variations, just the way, the nature of how people share information, it becomes wrong. And now you have wrong information that you think is the gospel, and that's not the way to go. So it's best to just hire a professional from the jump. One, because you want to make sure the information is correct, but also there's accountability with real professionals that you don't have with these random business coaches. If you follow a business coach online and, you know, the only connection you have with them is through an Instagram page, there is no business, there's no license, there's no like public information about that person, how do you track them? How do you find them if they take your money and run? Like, what do you do? Real professionals have accountability, and we have standards that we have to uphold. So be careful out there.
Your book, you wrote the book with the intentions of giving business owners tips on how to choose a name for their business. Yes. And how to protect themselves from litigation. You could just continue to do that through teaching people via TikTok and Instagram and through your clients. Why step into the world of literature?
I can't do that solely just through working with clients directly. Yeah. One, because some people may feel like, you know, the cost of my package to actually work with me for brand development is too expensive for them. Yeah. And I understand that. I'm not here to judge people's finances or count their pockets, right? Mm-hmm. The book is affordable at $42.99, so that people independently, if they have the wherewithal and the creativity on their own and just the general understanding to read that book and use that information to begin to name their business, then they're actually starting off from a good place. And again, they know that the information came from a credible source because I am an attorney and I do this work. But it's now in an affordable space, right? Like, you don't have to spend thousands of dollars on legal services initially. You still need me to file your application. You still shouldn't file your application on your own, because there's more to it than just choosing the name, right? It's how you file the application and all these other things. But initially, you're not building a business with a name that can't be registered at all. So that's why, because I care about the people. Again, it's another form of public interest for me, right? Yeah. Like, I care about people, and I'm always going to advocate for them to win, because that's just me.
You developed that from?
Just my good heart. One would say it's just the spirit in me. I don't know. it's just me. I come from good aren't shady. So it's just how I am. It's the right thing to do. I always cared about people. Even like when I was a kid and I was thinking about doing civil rights work, I would be so upset that people would discriminate against Black people because we were Black. I'm like, what? That's wrong. I just have this, you know, this feeling of justice in me. I'm a Libra. I don't know if that's it. I don't know.
You said to actively monitor the use of the mark and publicly discourages misuse. In reference to making sure that your trademark doesn't become generic, in the event that the trademark does become generic, how does an owner discourage its misuse, and is it really effective? I guess that goes back to what I asked, or when we were talking about Google.
We kind of covered that. So discourage it by making sure that your branding is consistent, and that you don't start to adopt someone else's misuse. And also through litigation. If you see certain things, you gotta fight.
Yeah. Sue. No, joking.
I mean, you know, sometimes that's the answer.
So NFTs are a hot topic right now, and you've posted about them on your Instagram.
Had a great session, and let me tell you, I do IG live so that people can get basic information to answer kind of like some general questions every once and again, and maybe we get a few people in there. But when we did this NFT session, yeah. When people stuff they can make money. Oh man, it was I don't know, it was like 100 people in there, and that ain't a million, but that's a lot for, you know, a random IG live where I know what it usually is. People want to make money, and I understand that. So, and shout out to Bruce Elliott, who, you know, was on the IG live and dropped some gems. He's in the space and gave a lot of information about it that the people found useful.
And, you know, but 100 people still a lot.
100 people was a lot, and I was blown because a couple weeks after I did another IG live with Sefi 2 Russell, shout out to her, she's a great accountant, and because I do understand that, so I do legal work, I'm not an accountant, I'm never giving you accountant information, yeah. But one of the benefits of becoming my client is I also provide referrals to other professionals. I don't get anything from it. It's just to help my clients find people and they can interview them and see if they like them, right? But I did one with Sappy too, and she's there to drop gems. Accounting is important. That's about your money. And there weren't nearly as many people. I won't tell you how many, but there weren't 100. So it's just interesting to see what people prioritize, and I don't know
what that's about. NFTs. So you've been hosting an Instagram live event. You know, you just spoke about that. How hard is it to get a trademark for an NFT?
So NFTs are images.
Yeah.
Right? So when we're talking about NFTs, it's not necessarily hard to get a trademark, but you have to think about exactly what you're trying to protect, right? So trademarks are to protect brands. So you can't have this random thing that you design that's not connected to a brand, because there have to be specimens. Again, not to get too complicated, I don't want to overwhelm the people. Yeah. Have to have specimens, evidence to support that you are actually using whatever it is you submitted to the USPTO in connection with a brand. So I would just say you have to be mindful of that. So it's not necessarily hard, but it has to be connected to a brand.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. You know, anybody have an NFT, like, anybody just can't have an NFT. It's like, how is that going to make sense? Like, what is it attached to?
And not just an NFT. There's nothing that you can submit to the USPTO and say, hey, I'm doing this thing and it's not connected to a brand. They want to see that it's being used in commerce in connection to commercial purposes, right? So like, it can't be a one-off of anything, and they're very serious about those things. So like, if you had a conversation, I would tell you more about that before we even got into that. And I hope that's not what people are doing, like submitting random images to the USPTO, like, this is my trademark. That's not how this works.
Why protect creatives in the first place?
Why not? Don't they deserve protection?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why. Because they deserve protection. But I don't only work with creatives. I think everyone's creative. I think to start a business, I think to step outside of what the norm is and the norm and the tradition of what some of our families used to do, which is wake up, go to work, come home, feed your kids, maybe talk to them a little bit, watch TV, go to bed. What'd you say?
Talk to them a little bit, just a little
bit. Yeah, you know, hey, how you doing? What's your name, kid? All right, cool, right? I think a lot of us are stepping outside of that box and saying, hey, there's more that I can do with this life. And also this conversation about creating multiple streams of revenue. It's nothing wrong with having a job, but having another business that can potentially make more than your job and become your main source of income and also allow you to create additional streams of revenue is just another avenue to pursue to further your wealth and also to channel some of your ambition and your creativity. So it's creatives, but my clients are business people, right? They create things, they create products, they create creams and candles and retail and all different things, restaurant owners and lounges and like my clients literally run the gamut, right? So it's everybody, software and apps and all these things. But they're business owners in nature, right? So to become a creative person takes nothing, but to turn it into a business, that's the real juice.
I think that's a good place to start wrapping this up. What's next for Amanda C. Gale and the Gale Law Firm?
So right now we are running our ownership series on our social media platforms, where we are highlighting the importance and the value of ownership. We reposted a video from Steve Harvey, who is having an amazing rebrand himself, in talking about the value of ownership and how he started to kind of pivot in his brand and join Family Feud and the ownership of the show abroad and all of these different things. And I just thought that it was so important for him to talk about how he learned so many lessons from not owning sooner, right? Everybody wants to make a dollar. And sometimes when you're getting into business, you feel like, okay, you know, they're paying me this much, so I should just be grateful for that. Again, that mindset is dead. We are now wanting to own more, have a larger stake in everything that we're doing, if not 100%, right? So he was talking about those decisions and how he's changed. And, you know, this is a 60-something-year-old man. So it's never too late for you to say, hey, I want more for myself. I want to make more money. I want to live a better life. So that's what we're focusing on, ownership and highlighting ownership, owners within all spaces. I posted about Pat McGrath today, who is, so in honor of the Sephora sale, this is not a Sephora ad or a Sephora plug, but they did get my money this week. It is Sephora sale. I know that means nothing to you, but they sell men's stuff.
I bought cologne from Sephora before.
There you go. But skincare, y'all have skin. You wash your face. That's good. But Pat McGrath is a huge player in the makeup industry. And only a few years ago, she actually started a brand called Pat McGrath Labs. It's my favorite lipstick. It's like my, it is my signature lipstick that people always ask me about. But she started it only a few years ago and she blew up immediately and investors started to seek her out. So the company is now valued at like $1 billion. And this is only in a few years. And people are wondering, like, how was she able to do that? Well, she was able to do that by, one, building a very strong brand, right? Her personal brand being known for doing amazing makeup, and just people started to the point where people started to ask her, you know, where are your products, right? That's how strong her own personal branding was. But what people don't realize and understand is that in order for you to seek out investors and to get that large in your own business, you have to make sure that you're taking the steps to protect it early on. Businesses only become highly valued, and you know, the appraiser will add value to your company the more protections that you have. So if you have a patent for anything, not a patent attorney, but you know, that's within the intellectual property space. If you have a patent for anything, if you own your trademarks, if you own your copyrights, everything is registered, that adds value to your company. So that's something that people need to think about. So that is some of the content that we're talking about as of late. So that's what Gale Law Firm is doing. We are still representing the many entrepreneurs that we are so grateful to represent, and providing them the value and the resources that they need as they continue to grow and build their brands. But we are also working small business owners, working with bigger business owners as Gale Law Firm grows because of the bigger brands that we're working with. They grow. So we all grow together. So that's what's going on. We are growing and building. And as for me personally, stay tuned. There's a lot in the works.
Thank you, Amanda Gale, or Amanda C. Gale Esquire, for being a part of this. And just last question, why do words matter to you?
Oh, words matter to me because they are how you can verbally express and convey emotion. They mean everything. It's like the essence of life. If you can't tell someone how you feel, if you can't tell someone what needs to be done, what are you even doing?
Yeah, so, you know, thanks again for being a part of it. Were you going to say something else?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
I also can't forget what's in the name, how to choose a trademark, available right now. It's on Gumroad because Amazon's fees were crazy, to be honest. But it's available on Gumroad. If you go to my website, www.agaylelaw.com, that's A-G-A-Y-L-E, law, L-A-W.com. It's available through direct purchase there. Or if you visit my Instagram, which is at agaylelaw, A-G-A-Y-L-E, law, L-A-W, you'll be able to get it via the link in my bio.
Great. Yeah, so thanks again, Amanda C. Gale, for being a part of this. Owner of the Gale Law Firm and author of What's in the Name, How to Choose a Trademark, Detailed Tips, Examples, and Case Law Directly from a Trademark Attorney. Words matter.
Words definitely matter. Thank you.
All right.